This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 21st October 2022. Hello. And welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle, dated the 20th of October, 2022. Our readers today are John Richards.
Hello.
Jane Rutter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The headline stories this week are Murder Inquiry is Launched by Police, Adjutant General's Corps on Parade, and Bridge Infill Plans have been halted. So we'll start with the story behind the first headline. Murder inquiry is launched by police. Police have launched a murder inquiry in a Meon Valley village following the death of a woman in her 90s. In a statement to the Chronicle, the police said, "Officers are investigating the circumstances surrounding the death of a woman in Waltham Chase. Police were called shortly after midnight on Friday the 7th of October to the report of a death of a woman in her 90s and an address in Chase Grove. The woman's family have been informed and are being supported by specialist officers. A man in his 70s and known to the woman has been arrested on suspicion of murder as part of inquiries and has been bailed until November the 4th. One resident of Chase Grove said the woman had been a long-term resident of many years and was living on her own. The resident described seeing police cars and forensic teams arrive from around 4:30 a.m. on the morning of October the 7th. City Councillor Frank Pearson, the local ward member who lives in nearby Swanmore, said, "My first reaction is that I'm absolutely horrified. I'm horrified about the murder. I find it difficult to understand how anyone can mentally be in a position to want to terminate someone's life. It's even worse if the person knows the people concerned. It's more of a shock. The investigation remains ongoing."
Adjutant General's Corps on Parade. A military parade has been held in Winchester to celebrate a 30-year anniversary. The Adjutant General's Corps celebrated its 30th anniversary with a Freedom Parade down the High Street to the Guildhall on the morning of Saturday, October the 15th. The Corps' Deputy Colonel-in-Chief, the Duchess of Gloucester, was in attendance. An account of the event said, "This parade is an ancient tradition allowing the regiment to parade through the city with bayonets fixed, drums beating and colours flying. It was a great opportunity for both Winchester City and rural teams to work together alongside Winchester City Council and the Royal Military Police. The parade brought a large crowd together and it was good to see so many people out supporting them."
Bridge infill plans have been halted. A national roads body has confirmed that controversial plans to infill a bridge in the Upper Itchen Valley have been halted indefinitely. The bridge on Stoke Road near Itchen Abbas had been planned to be infilled by National Highways, but the work was temporarily postponed as part of a national pause. The infilling of bridges is part of a national plan to fill foamed concrete under old bridges which National Highways has said is reversible. However, the roads body has now announced that following a capacity assessment of the bridge, major works are now unnecessary. This comes after a council ordered National Highways to remove the infilling of a bridge in Cumbria following a public outcry. Eden District Council refused retrospective planning permission for the work in June and has now served an enforcement notice to remove the foamed concrete under the single arch structure in Great Musgrave. National Highways had said infilling was needed to prevent further deterioration of the bridge from occurring and remove the associated risk of structural collapse and harm to the public. The bridge was one of 134 sites slated for demolition or infilling around the country. A National Highways spokesman said, "We understand the strength of feeling around infilling, and we've listened to people's views. We will only consider infilling where no viable or reasonable alternative is available. We work with experts from across the heritage, rail, heritage, environmental and active travel sectors. Their expertise helps us in reviewing each structure that requires major work against a range of criteria, not only for repurposing but also for heritage or ecological value." Graham Bickerdike, a member of the HRE Group of Engineers, Sustainable Transport Advocates and Greenway Developers, said, "We obviously welcome the news that Stoke Road Bridge has now been reprieved, but why did National Highways decide to infill it, causing concern within the community and amongst those hoping to construct a cycle path below it? Before carrying out a capacity assessment and determining whether any work was actually necessary. Although the company has taken positive steps in a much better direction of late, there is much it needs to do better if it is to rebuild its reputation and trust with stakeholders."
Next, we have the death announcements. Day, Dawn Elizabeth Day, on the 10th of October, aged 88. Davies, Eudora May Davies, known as Dora, at Cedar Lawn Care Home, Romsey, on the 11th of October, aged 95. Hickson, Dorothy, born 1933, died 2022, on the 16th of October, 2022. Noah, Glenna Noah, on the 12th of October. Mariner, Yamis Mariner, née Daryl Lane, in hospital on the 11th of October. Mackenzie, Ruth Louisa Mackenzie, née Richens, born in Warnford, died at home in Sheldon on the 20th of September, aged 84. Pearson, Roger J. Pearson, at home on the 8th of October. Pittman, May Louise Pittman, known as Bunty, died at aged 104 on the 6th of October. Christian comment this week is written by Rosemary A. Baker and is entitled The Beginning and the End. Yesterday, some sixth sense made me check the dates for when I was due to write this Christian comment column. I had had a close shave last month with the Chronicle prompting me just before they were going to print. Oh good, I thought, the 20th, that's next week. Suddenly, this morning, the 18th, while preparing for the plumber to visit, I realised that the 20th was this week and I'd better start thinking and writing. Well, the plumber came at 9 a.m. when we were expecting him mid-morning. So what better theme, I thought, than time itself? Human beings are creatures of time and we are preoccupied with that theme. We wear watches so that we can keep account of time. We ask regarding the criminal, how much time did he get? And we ourselves wonder, how much time do I have left? Different cultures have different perspectives about time. I once waited over an hour for a Nigerian bride to arrive, and there is a Cornish expression, directly, which doesn't seem to have an exact time as such. The concept of time has been problematical for philosophers. There is even considerable controversy about among biblical scholars as to how precisely time is employed in the divine scheme of things. One thing is certain, the scriptures make a distinction between the temporal and the eternal. That is, time that does not apply to God and man in the same way. So the Bible has different concepts of times that we might assume today. The New Testament has two main concepts of time represented by the two Greek words chronos and kairos. Chronos is about sequential time, as we often think of it, clocks, calendars and weekend plans. It's where we get the words like chronological and even chronicle. Kairos is about the right season or occasion. Some Greek dictionaries define it as appointed time. Jesus came into the world on kairos time, that is precisely the right time. Kairos time is about a long-awaited hope coming to fruition. It is about times of prayer and worship, walking through one season of life into another, or waiting on God. Just as my creative juices were flowing, I suddenly glanced at the kitchen clock. I hardly ever wear a watch since I retired. Horror of horrors, it said 3:15, and I had an appointment with my dog at the vet booked for 3:30. Fortunately, this clock is 5 minutes fast, so I made it comfortably, and Struan was passed as A1 fit for his age. So appointments are where I began and where I must end. Perhaps fitting for the beginning and the end, Alpha and Omega, first and last letters of the Greek alphabet, are the title of Christ and God in the book of Revelation. So that was by Rosemary A. Baker. We now continue with the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so either by telephoning 01962 860836, that's 01962 860836, emailing letters at hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters at hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So we'll start with the first letter,
which is from Christopher Sharrett, and he writes about footbridge plan. You recently reported Councillor Todd defending the decision to close Andover Road. As I recall, the original plan for Barton Farm included more playing fields for the expanded intake at Henry Beaufort School to be accessed by a footbridge over the Andover Road to avoid accidents. Since building work started, the 1 kilometre stretch of Andover Road, which Councillor Todd wants to block, has acquired traffic lights at the junctions with Manley Road and Winchester Avenue, and a puffin crossing to connect Barton Farm with the footpath from Henry Beaufort School. Your article noted that Winchester Avenue is currently not fit for purpose. It is 0.5 kilometre short of what is needed, and diverted traffic would zigzag through King's Barton and close to Barton Farm Primary School. As well as taking normal traffic there, would also be traffic diverted off the A34 when there is an accident. Vehicles avoiding the A34 when M3 Junction 9 at Winnell is being reconstructed, and school run traffic from outside King's Barton. Plus, there will be parked vehicles and roadworks along the route. Were the residents who paid fancy prices for their new houses warned about this? Winchester Avenue is filled with traffic-calming bumps and a 10-mile-an-hour speed limit. Some diversion. Twice a week I see ambulances heading along Andover Road to or from the A34 to emergencies and accidents north of Winchester as far as Andover and Whitchurch. Their nearest A&E is Winchester. Every minute counts, as they say, but Councillor Todd will send them on a longer and slower route. But we might just end up with a good old British compromise and do nothing. Andover Road serves, in effect, as the Hare-Stock Week bypass. It serves as the Barton Farm King's Barton bypass too. If Councillor Todd extends the cycleway from South Wantston to Andover Road through King's Barton, then there will be ample provision for the few cyclists who I see riding along Andover Road now. I can count them on the finger of one finger most times that I go into Winchester by car or bus. That letter's from Christopher Sharrett, Waverley Drive, South Wantston.
Just to say that there will be a news item relating to the proposed Andover Road closure later on in this recording.
This letter is entitled Technology Costs and it's from Susan Fairbrother. Has anyone thought to factor in the effect of modern technology on the cost of living? So much nowadays has to be done online. The only way to book a slot at the Winchester Recycling Centre in Bar End seems to be via the internet, and mobile phones seem to be essential to the majority of people. The monthly charge for these items is not cheap, even with the basic tariffs, but I see parents complaining they cannot afford food for their child, but the child has a mobile phone. Have we got our priorities wrong? Unfortunately, I am one of many old people brought up during the rigours of the war, which I would not wish on anyone, but it does mean food on the table is more important than being able to text my friend every few minutes. And that's from Susan Fairbrother, Byron Avenue in Full Flood, Winchester.
Karen Barrett writes about taking the mick. It's puzzling to learn that Khalid Aziz is so traumatised by an occasional union representative called Mick, Chronicle October the 13th. As reassurance, I can reveal that my own Unite leader is called Sharon and the TUC boss is Francis. I must also point out that there are some genuine middle-class Micks completely uninvolved in industrial disputes, notably the bloke in the Rolling Stones, whose mums probably mourned their rejection of the names that they were christened with. But moving on, I suppose we should all be inspired by Mr. Aziz's exhortation to work harder. I'm not entirely sure what he means, what he does, apart from writing, that he intends to do more of. But no doubt the nation will be grateful. I showed his piece to my low-paid, overloaded, soon to be balloted essential NHS worker daughter, and she said she'd had a long day at her understaffed hospital department and was simply too tired to read it. And that letter was from Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Simon Lever writes this letter entitled Well Done, Kiara. Kiara Beer is such a fine example of not only coming to terms with one-handed life, but has spread positivity to many others throughout her activities, engaging with people with similar disabilities. Hampshire Chronicle, October the 13th. Overcoming the physical and psychological challenges of being one-handed and accomplishing such a positive mindset, thus improving people's lives, is admirable. Kiara has certainly proved that being comfortable in one's own skin is essential, facilitating empathetic resonance with those whom she helps reverse their negative views of the world. All credit to Kiara, she will have made quite a difference to many lives. That's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
This letter from Andrew Allen about the Weirs delay. I wrote a letter to you in July about the delays on the completion of the replacement of the wooden edging along the Weirs. The council reopened in the July 21st edition, stating the contractor, Robert Nicholas, were due to start the final phase within the next 2 weeks in order to complete the project in the autumn. 2 months have elapsed and we are now well into the autumn, but no work has taken place. One of the new barriers has since been damaged, Safety barriers have to be installed to protect the public from falling into the river. Perhaps the City Council would like to explain this further delay and confirm that the work will start and have been completed this year and within their so-called planned timescale. That's from Andrew Allen, Chesil Street in Winchester.
James Anderson writes about net zero issue. The Chronicle has kindly published a sequence of three letters from me setting out the impracticalities of net zero with the key data. The question could not be simpler. How can we generate 1,500 terawatt hours of electricity, given that just 4% of that is currently from wind and solar? Climate change all you like, but setting targets at COP26 or 27 when no one has a plan is fantasy stuff. Sadly, it appears that supporters of WINAC prefer to rant about alleged conspiracies and personal mudslinging, Chronicle October the 14th, rather than offer a workmanlike plan. Meanwhile, the topsy-turvy economics continue. A current project uses dirt-cheap solar power in the Arabian desert to make hydrogen, convert to ammonia for bulk shipping, retrieve in the UK and compress to 640 bars for trucks and buses. From dirt-cheap solar, the fuel costs 8 times as much per mile as diesel. There will be economics of scale, limited by the physics, to about a 5 times premium. It is, of course, Arabian hydrogen sold on an international market and of limited security to the UK. And what if the Arabians adulterate with much cheaper blue hydrogen from their gas? And that letter was from James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
Exposing the antisocial behaviour, writes Kenneth Day. Mr. Thompson, Hampshire Chronicle, October the 13th, is to be congratulated for exposing the thoroughly antisocial behaviour in the Chesil multi-storey car park, which has passed the City Council by for so long. Once again, it seems the local population is left to police and report on these unacceptable incidents. Having sorted the problem out, I trust that Winchester City Council turn their attention to the new, largely unused Barfield Close multi-storey, where antisocial behaviour, aided by the 24/7 lighting, is already causing mayhem. It wouldn't have been so bad if the still outstanding CCTV, alarm and security measures promised had been completed before it was opened in early 2022 to the public. So writes Kenneth Day, Domum Road, Winchester.
This letter from Martin Holmes, entitled A Familiar Mantra, has been rather overtaken by events, but nevertheless. Sir, you report that Winchester MP Steve Bryan has said that government can't help everyone or solve every problem, Chronicle September 29th. This is a familiar mantra from Mr. Bryan, who has deployed it often in attempts to defend the inaction or ineffectiveness of successive Tory administrations. But it is clear from the recent mini-budget that the Truss government is eager to help the wealthiest at the expense of the rest of us, and rather than seek to solve problems, has deliberately made a difficult economic and financial outlook much worse through its doctrinaire application of what can only be described as toy town economic ideology. It would be more helpful if Mr. Bryan would seek to explain to his constituents exactly why the government has decided to undermine the public finances, and with it the UK's financial standing, and force up further the cost of living of the vast majority. Of course, it is possible he has no more idea than the Prime Minister or Chancellor, neither of whom have been able to articulate any comprehensible explanation or justification. Mr. Kwarteng is reported to be unhappy that everyone is criticising his budget with the benefit of hindsight, but a prudent politician would have applied some foresight before contemplating embarking on such a reckless and damaging path. It is extraordinary that he and Truss insist that we all have to wait until the end of November for them to complete their homework and think up a rational for the irrational. This is not good enough, and Mr. Bryan, on behalf of his constituents, should tell them so. He should take heed of his fellow backbench Tory MP Julian Smith, who said this weekend, "The first job of an MP is to act in the interest of the constituents and in the national interest." And that's from Martin Holmes, Culverwell Gardens in Winchester.
Next we have the editorial comment from the Hampshire Chronicle. There is no letter from Westminster this week, perhaps not unsurprisingly. And after that, we will have first person. So the editorial comment. A Victorian bridge in the Itchen Valley. It is at first glance a small victory. A controversial plan to infill a bridge in the upper Itchen Valley has been halted indefinitely. National Highways wanted to fill with concrete the arch of the Victorian Bridge on Stoke Road near Itchen Abbas to protect the public and save it money on maintenance. The roads body has now announced that, following a capacity assessment, major works are now unnecessary. This is good news. Filling the arch would have been an appalling way of treating a piece of 19th century industrial architecture. It would also have scuppered long-term plans for the former railway line to be reopened as a footpath. The charity The Watercress has, since 2016, done fine work on creating routes for walkers on two old railways, the line from Winchester to Alresford and Winchester to Sutton Scotney. Probably 98% of Winchester people were unaware of the bridge, but that is irrelevant. A national body with no input from local people had planned to ruin something that has the potential to be something of huge public benefit. That National Highways now say it will do all it can to support the Watercress Way plans is to be welcomed, albeit at this late stage.
First person this week is written by George Hayter, and his title is Anatomic Turnaround. In preparing this column, I got one thing wrong. The risk of radioactive leaks from nuclear power stations has turned out to be less than I thought. Statistics seem to show that atomic power plants are reasonably safe. Usually, when I sit down to type, I have a point of view to get across, and I start by Googling facts that support that point of view. This month, I set out to warn of the risk of atomic power stations emitting lethal radiation, but my internet trawl produced barely an atom of evidence. The facts suggest there is less chance than I thought of Hampshire's population being fatally toasted by radioactive dust blown here from a disastrous leak from a cellar field or a sizewell. The longer odds on nuclear death is good news for Hampshire's population, but bad news for anyone planning a substantial article on the dangers of nuclear power. Winchester's good citizens can now sleep more soundly at night, but I've got to think up something else to write about. But before I seek some other doomful topic for my next month's column, I better spend the rest of this one justifying my atomic paranoia turnaround. Warning nuclear power generation is a complex business, and my investigation has been far from thorough. There are already over 400 atom power stations in the world, with hundreds more under construction, planned or proposed. Around the globe, there have already been several big leaks of radiation from nuclear power stations, with radioactive materials scattered over thousands of square miles. The worst, of course, was the 1986 Chernobyl disaster, which involved explosions, a meltdown of the reactor core, and smoke from a week-long fire raining radioactivity over Europe. Experts have said catastrophic nuclear accidents are unlikely, but few are thought to have included a tsunami in their calculations, although that is exactly what caused the 2011 Fukushima meltdown in Japan. There may be other potential scenarios that have not been foreseen, perhaps involving physics or human frailty. A 1957 fire at the Windscale nuclear station in northern England was rated one of the worst ever nuclear accidents. It spread radioactive fallout throughout Europe. No deaths were directly linked to the disaster, but scientists calculated that its release of the polonium-210 isotope must have caused 100 to 240 cancer deaths. A fundamental principle of health and safety practice is that it is better to remove a dangerous process rather than try to protect people from it. So, should nuclear power stations be eliminated? Where do we draw the line? Radioactivity has valuable applications in medicine. Despite our concerns, statistics suggest to me that the worldwide nuclear power industry kills no more members of the public than other heavy industries. Wikipedia's list of deadly radiation accidents reports a claim in the Financial Times that over 2,000 died after Fukushima, but they were all thought to have died through stress of the massive evacuation, which is often said to have evacuated too widely. An accident in the USSR killed 200, but that involved fuel reprocessing rather than power generation, and it was in the 1950s, the early years of nuclear practicality. Greenpeace is opposed to nuclear power, yet fear of nuclear power station leaks is not the main plank of Greenpeace's argument. Instead, the environmental pressure group emphasises that nuclear power is expensive, squanders cash better spent on renewables, and creates long-lasting radioactive waste. It may kill less than I feared, but I'm still against nuclear power. Billions are needed to build its power stations and billions more to decommission them. Then there's the cost of protecting us from their radioactive waste for hundreds and even thousands of years. Instead, Britain should build more wind and solar generation and build vast batteries to store power for periods without wind or sun. We should also pioneer tidal generation and energy storage using, for example, potential energy.
A couple of items under What's On. The first one is this coming Sunday, so you may apologise if you don't get the information. It will only be if your memory stick arrives on Saturday that you can take some action about it. But a rock celebration is coming to Winchester as a seven-piece live band at the Theatre Royal. Rock for Heroes is set to stun Winchester on Sunday, October the 23rd, and will be performing over 20 classic rock songs from legendary members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, including Bon Jovi and Prince. So this will be at the Theatre Royal on Sunday the 23rd of October at 7:30. And if you're interested and if you get this information in time, the Theatre Royal box office telephone number is 01962 840440. That's 01962 840440. Not happening until the beginning of November. An award winning comedy group is taking the stage in Winchester as part of their UK tour. Ostentatious, and that's a play on the word Jane Austen, an improvised comedy troupe has begun a UK-wide tour for autumn 2022 and will conclude at the Theatre Royal in Winchester on November the 4th and 5th. Each show, the cast creates a brand new lost Jane Austen novel based on a title suggested by the audience to produce an improvised story. Previous lost masterpieces include Crazy Rich Georgians, Double O Darcy and Game of Scones. The Regency romp includes self-confident dukes, swooning ladies and romantic entanglements performing in period costumes with live musical accompaniments. So the impromptu show will be at the Theatre Royal in Jury Street on November the 4th at 7:30 and on November the 5th at 2:30 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. And just to remind you of the telephone number of the Theatre Royal box office, it's 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. Sunrise is around 7:40 in the morning and sunset is around 6 o'clock in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Before we move on to the other news items, we are now going to John Richards, who of course is chairman of the Talking Newspaper, is going to read a tribute which appeared in the Chronicle this week to Ros Lydiard. Ros, I'm sure, will be known to many of you because she was both a presenter and a reader for both the magazine and the Talking Newspaper. And she very sadly died a few weeks ago. So over to John to read this tribute. Mm.
Life is not a rehearsal, was the way she lived. Life is not a rehearsal was the mantra by which Ros Lydiard lived. However, in preparation for the hundreds of roles she played on stage in Winchester, Southampton, and on UK tours, she did spend many happy and rewarding hours in rehearsal. Ros, who died 78 last month, had her first experience, age 12, in the chorus of a pantomime at the newly built Week Community Centre. She progressed to leading roles and then principal boy or villains, such as the Wicked Witch. Other memorable roles included Beatty in Roots, Estelle in Hui Clo, and the deaf-mute Belinda in Johnny Belinda. Ros used her body and facial expressions so eloquently the audience forgot Belinda couldn't speak. Ros joined the Chesil Theatre in the 1970s. Her performances were numerous and varied. In Same Time Next Year, a two-hander with Malcolm Brown, she was, as he remembers, supportive, adaptive, explorative, funny, warm, charming, and above all, dedicated. As a director, she was firm, decisive but open-minded, always wanting to have a happy show. She had a forensic attention to and perfectionism in all aspects of production, not just the acting. Sleuth, with two in the cast, had a team of 40+. With the Southampton-based Maskers Company and later Motley Crue, Ros performed at the Nuffield Theatre and in open-air productions, wielding a sword with aplomb in Fair Maid of the West. She won an Echo Curtain Call Award for her portrayal of Esme in Amy's View. Ros had little vanity and was as happy to portray the raucous criminal and scene-stealing Diana Trapes in The Beggar's Opera as the elegant Lady Aramamanth in Wild Oaks. She combined the two styles in Noises Off as the stylish diva Dotty Ottley playing the charlady in the play Within the Play. A particularly outstanding performance was the title role in Prynne. Following two serious operations, Ros decided to try what people had long been urging her to do and become a professional. She toured the country in an Alan Bleasdale's Having a Ball, took over as the nurse in Romeo and Juliet, learning the lines in less than 24 hours, and featured in Christmas entertainments at Salisbury Playhouse. With Peter, her husband, she set up a company, Prime Theatre, in 2007 for older actors and audiences still in their prime. They toured with Old World and devised a popular evening of nostalgia. Thanks for the memory. Ros is survived by Peter and her son, Richard. Ros Lydiard, 1944 to 2022.
We now continue with news items.
And this is the article that we promised you about the Andover Road closure. Councils dispute road diversion. Civic chiefs are disagreeing over who is responsible for the proposed diversion of Andover Road through the new King's Barton estate. Hampshire County Council says it is a matter for Winchester City Council as the planning authority, while the city says it is a county matter as it is the highways authority. The current Andover Road will be closed to through traffic and the main route diverted along Winchester Avenue once King's Barton reaches 650 occupied homes. It is currently around 420. The issue is highly controversial because most residents in the new estate are opposed to the diversion agreed in 2011, and a petition with 3,000 names was gathered over the summer. The debate over responsibility came up at the King's Barton Forum. The meeting heard that Conservative County Councillor Edward Herron, Executive Lead Member for Transport and Environment Strategy, had written to the petitioners, the King's Barton Residents Association, KBRA. Hampshire County Council, as Highway Authority, was not the determining planning authority for this matter. The decision to close Andover Road was agreed via a planning appeal heard by a planning inspector. The County Council cannot lawfully unilaterally undo this planning decision, and on this occasion have no power to direct the developer or the local planning authority to keep Andover Road open to all traffic. In planning process terms, the changes requested by the Residents Association would need to be voluntarily agreed by Carla Holmes and the local planning authority, which is Winchester City Council. One way to implement any change would be via Carla Holmes and the LPA reaching agreement on a variation to or a new planning application process. At present, the County Council is open-minded as to alternative access options, of which there are several potential, including having Andover Road open to all traffic, and will seek to support or agree any changes based on the technical evidence and case for change. In light of new growth options north of Barton Farm and the identified need for a northern park and ride site for Winchester, the County Council consider there is a good case for reviewing the Andover Road access arrangements. To that end, the County Council will continue working closely with Carla Holmes and the LPA to help facilitate the best outcomes for the existing and future residents of Winchester, but it is not the lead authority in this planning matter. The forum heard Liberal Democrat City Councillor say Councillor Herron was being disingenuous. Forum Chairman Steve Cramoisen said Councillor Herron was being economical with the truth. City Council leader Martin Todd said, "The County Council is being disingenuous. They signed off in January 2011 a statement of common ground on the road network with Carla before the planning decision was taken. Before the planning decision was taken, they had backed the realignment of Andover Road." He added that KBRA has talked about a low-traffic neighbourhood that might entail closing the estate to through traffic.
Six-foot public art installation delivers powerful message. A public art installation raising awareness of youth suicide has been unveiled outside Winchester Cathedral. The six-foot-high installation is a sand timer that revolves every 40 seconds, reflecting global statistics that every 40 seconds someone ends their life by suicide. A counter marks each revolution to reflect just how many lives this represents. Within the sand timer, there are 161 balls, 113 orange-coloured balls for boys and 48 purple-coloured balls for girls. These signify the 161 children and adolescents under the age of 19 years old who ended their life by suicide in 2020 in England. Among those speaking at the event on Monday, October the 10th, was Barbara Deacon, whose daughter Bryony ended her life by suicide 10 years ago. She has since become involved with the Survivors of Bereavement by Suicide charity in Hampshire. She said, "Having just had the 10th anniversary of my daughter Bryony's death, I felt privileged to speak about her and the legacy she has left me in making the meaning of her death in my work with Survivors of Bereavement by Suicide and also with Hampshire Voices, a collective of people with living experience of suicide."
Graduation ceremonies held at the cathedral. A sea of caps and gowns surrounded Winchester Cathedral for the beginning of the university's graduation ceremonies. More than 2,000 students from Winchester University are graduating from October the 18th to October the 21st inside the cathedral. Gowns, caps and purple hoods are filling Winchester High Street as pupils who completed their degrees, masters and PhDs this year sign in at the Guildhall. The University of Winchester's Music Centre recruited the help of Stanmore Primary School's choir to help open the ceremonies with a song from Matilda the Musical. And there's a photograph accompanying this piece of 10 graduates, all bedecked in academic gowns, academic hoods and mortarboards, looking every inch the future of the country.
Legal challenge rejected by High Court. Campaigners have been rebuffed in an appeal to derail multi-million pound plans for land surrounding River Park Leisure Centre, but they insist the fight is far from over. On Wednesday, October the 12th, the High Court refused the Friends of River Park permission for a judicial review of the decision the City Council made in March 2022 about selling the Leisure Centre and part of the surrounding area to Southampton University. The request for a judicial review had already been refused permission in August, and this decision was upheld on Wednesday by Ed Miliband's wife, Mrs. Justice Thornton, after a hearing at the High Court, which found that the process for the decision was legally correct. The council has also been awarded £5,000 in costs. The Chronicle understands the Friends met last night to discuss an application for leave to the Court of Appeal, as they believe the latest ruling was wrong on several counts. Members insist they are determined to continue the challenge, but now face a greater need than ever for additional fundraising. A spokesperson for the group said, "Unfortunately, our renewed application on October the 12th for leave to present the case for a judicial review in the High Court was not granted. However, undaunted, the Friends intend to continue the challenge. The support we have received has been very encouraging. It is clear that many of Winchester's residents agree that the Council's behaviour in disposing of the River Park Leisure Centre site, without any consultation and in apparent breach of the duty of trust they owe the public, is wrong." Councillor Martin Todd, leader of Winchester City Council, said, "We have always been confident that the decision to allow the University of Southampton the space and time to look into developing their Winchester campus on the former River Park Leisure Centre site was sound, and I'm pleased that the judge has reaffirmed this. I now look forward to the university working closely with local people to shape the future of this site as they share and develop their plans for an extended campus." On behalf of the Friends, Rose Burns said, "We are determined to make the council think again about this valuable publicly owned piece of land in Winchester city centre. The public needs to have a say in what should happen next. No one wants to see the neglected building fall further into disrepair over the five-year period given to the university. The council should either recommission it or else demolish it now so it can continue to be used for public recreation."
Store to close for relocation. A Winchester High Street store is set to close for relocation within the next few months. Closs and Hamblin, more popularly known as C&H Fabrics, in Winchester High Street will be closing to move to a smaller unit in the area due to the business no longer being financially viable in its current form. The downsize is expected to happen around the end of January 2023, with the Winchester branch currently looking for a new home near the top of the High Street. The smaller showroom will only be for furnishings, meaning the sale of dress fabrics, the sale of knitting yarns and craft fabrics, craft products will end after 32 years. The staff team of 30 will be reduced to about 5 employees, with 25 others being made redundant. Store manager Julie Pither said, "We're trying to find a property somewhere at the top of the High Street, but it's not yet to happen. It will just be the ground floor, which means everything in the rest of the store goes. So it's quite sad for the staff and customers because it's the end of an era for a big family company. We've been here since 1988 and it's very sad. We'll probably be moving at the end of January. It's mainly due to the cost of rent, rates, energy, staff and internet shopping, Brexit and COVID. Roll it all into one. And sadly, it means it's not a viable business anymore. All our 8 shops are changing over to small furnishing and interior shops. So we are looking at a third of our business moving over. The furnishing side has been really strong. So there is a positive element as the company can carry on in some format. It's hard to be positive when people are losing their jobs, but it's good that we're not going altogether. The Winchester branch is looking at just a third of the business moving to the new location. Staff were informed of the relocation a month ago, and the shop now displays signs stating store closing for relocation. All stock must go.
Support services launched. Supporters of St John's Winchester attended Winchester Cathedral on September the 28th to celebrate the launch of 2 new community support services, St John's Dementia Support and St John's Home Share. The expansion aims to broaden the outreach of the charity and help older people outside of the St John's almshouses. The Dementia Service, in partnership with Dementia UK, will support people living with dementia aged over 55, as well as their families and carers. 2 specialist admiral nurses and 2 dementia advisers will be on hand for one-to-one advice and practical solutions. Meanwhile, St John's Home Share aims to match an older householder who has a spare room with a younger lodger who can dedicate 10 hours a week to helping around the house. In exchange, the younger sharer receives affordable accommodation for a mutually beneficial living arrangement.
Planning Chiefs back Church's glass extension. Plans to build an extension on a city centre church can proceed, despite council officers recommending refusal. Winchester Baptist Church in Swan Lane submitted an application for an extension, which will comprise of a glass structure, making it more accessible. However, Winchester City Council planning officers recommended that it be refused on the grounds that the building being in the conservation area, and they thought it was out of character with the street scene. Members of the planning committee disagreed with this, so the plan will go ahead. Reverend Marcus Dickinson from the church spoke at the meeting of the planning committee of October the 7th. He said, "We are a provider of local services and we help vulnerable people. They may pass our building and think we are not open due to our less than welcoming entrance. This will allow people to see into the church. We want it to be warm and vibrant. We believe the extension is in keeping with the character of the area. The City of Winchester Trust supports the proposals." Councillor Frank Pearson agreed with the comment from the Trust. He said, "It's tall, but it's on the same footprint of the original building. To coin a phrase, let there be light. I can't agree with the officer's recommendations." Councillor Jane Rutter said, "I'm very torn by this application. I agree with Councillor Pearson, and I have respect for the views of the Trust. I think it will disappear into the street scene. I don't think it will harm the conservation area. I don't think the harm is enough to warrant refusal. Councillor Michael Reed said, the extension blends in and I think it will enhance the church structure. Chairman of the committee, Councillor Therese Evans, said, I agree with the members. The church should be allowed to adapt. It's a beautiful building and this won't harm it. The committee voted against the officer's recommendations with 8 against and 1 abstention. This means that the proposal has been permitted.
University appointment. The University of Winchester has announced the appointment of Sarah Pook as its new Director of Finance and Planning. Sarah will join Winchester in January 2023 from the University of Southampton, where she is currently Executive Director, Finance and Planning. A member of the University Executive, she is responsible for the Directorate of Finance, Planning and Analytics, as well as the Stewardship of Finances, Budgeting and Preparation of Financial Statements. Prior to joining the higher education sector 11 years ago, Sarah had senior posts within local government, including as Deputy County Treasurer at Hampshire County Council, with responsibility for a team of 480. She has significant experience of strategic leadership and organisational development and of working with partner organisations and government departments, including the Department for Education. Vice-Chancellor Professor Sarah Greer said, I'm delighted that Sarah is joining the team here at Winchester, and I look forward to working with her and welcoming her to the university in the new year. Her wealth of experience and expertise will be a hugely important addition to the team as the university delivers its ambitious plans to be a leading university in the south of England.
Proposals agreed for revamp of King's Walk. Plans to rejuvenate King's Walk are progressing after 2 planning applications were approved. Excuse me. The proposals are to install new lighting outside the Nutshell Theatre, convert the bin area on Tanner Street into an event space, and to put branding around the outside of the building on Middlebrook Street, Silver Hill and Tanner Street. In the long term, the King's Walk would be demolished as part of the new Silver Hill scheme, also called the Central Winchester Regeneration. The applications, submitted by Winchester City Council, were discussed at a meeting of its planning committee on October the 7th. One objection was submitted by one of the business owners nearby in relation to the events space. Louisa Bond said, I run Winchester Pilates, situated in Middlebrook Street above Poundland. We are based on the first and second floor and have windows on 3 sides of our premises, which overlook the Nutshell and the loading bay. If the loading bay becomes an events space, I'm seriously concerned that the noise will impact our business, as we are open from 8 a.m. until 9 p.m. 7 days per week. We have no objection to lighting changes in the King's Walk, but noise will adversely affect our ability to operate commercially. Councillor Therese Evans said, It's very disappointing that nobody has come to speak in support of the application. I support this. It would improve the public realm, and the event space is a good use of that area. Councillor Jane Rutter said, The whole area has significantly improved. The fences outside have worked really well. Let's get on with it so we can knock the wretched building down and start again. The application for the branding will see graphics put on the walls with the Central Winchester Regeneration logo on the Silver Hill side. The City of Winchester Trust objected to the plan. It said, temporary proposals to decorate the brick walls in Silver Hill and Tanner Street are unnecessary adornment and inappropriate to the character of the conservation area. The Trust, therefore, objects to this application. Councillor Frank Pearson said, Tanner Street does need beautifying. I would be happier with mosaics on the wall, which would look more permanent. Councillor Rutter said it will be a more attractive area. Let's get it done. Both applications were permitted by the committee unanimously.
A climate assembly. Residents across Winchester will be able to attend the first ever event dedicated to discussing local priorities for reducing carbon emissions, as well as the cost of living. A full-day event held by Winchester Together for Our Planet will offer residents the opportunity to join the conversation on how to reduce carbon emissions. The event is at Winchester Guildhall on Saturday, October the 22nd from 10 a.m. until 4:30 p.m. While guests such as Councillor Kelsey Lerney, Cabinet Member for Climate Emergency at the City Council, will be in attendance to hear participants' views and speak about how they will influence Council plans to achieve carbon neutrality. Councillor Lerney said, "We have made a commitment to being carbon neutral as a district, an ambitious target, but one we are determined to progress. We know it will take the effort from everyone, individuals, national and local government, and organisations alike, for us to achieve this. I'm always pleased to take part in events like these, as the more we talk about the issues, the more we are bringing the challenges to the forefront. I acknowledge everyone to take part. I encourage everyone to take part. No prior knowledge is needed and all are welcome." Councillor Lerney will join other speakers on the day, which promises to be full of interesting debate. The Winchester District Climate Assembly follows the success of the Young People's Climate Assembly in 2021. All reasonable expenses will be reimbursed on the day, so that everyone can take part, regardless of costs.
Amdram Theatre buys neighbouring house for expansion. The Chisel Theatre in Winchester has bought the next door house, paving the way for its expansion plans. Winchester Dramatic Society, based at the Chisel Theatre, was celebrating on Monday, October the 17th, with the purchase of the former Early's Coal Yard on Chisel Street. The Society now owns land and buildings at 14 Chisel Street, next to the existing theatre, and can go forward with their proposals for expansion. Chairman David Small said, "As an amateur theatre company, we have been entertaining the community since 1863, and for the last 55 years from our Chisel Theatre base. Over this time, our activities have been extended, but the footprint of the medieval building we are proud to call home can't. This landmark occasion gives us the opportunity to satisfy so many needs, particularly for disabled access and for facilities for children, including our own Chisel Youth Theatre. William Shakespeare's Macbeth is being presented in January 2023. This will hark back to the early days, being the very first play performed by the Winchester Dramatic Society."
Community group finds a new home. A community club that feared it might have to discontinue meetings due to overwhelming price rises has found a new long-term home. Winchester Café Scientifique, I think it's usually called Café C, was one of a number of community groups that faced an alarming tariff increase for using the ARC's facilities in Jury Street after a warning sent by the Hampshire Cultural Trust, HCT, at the beginning of September. Winchester Café C previously paid £30 a month to use the ARC, before being informed that they would need to pay £180, a six-fold increase. The cultural charity that manages the ARC spent 6 months evaluating how the space is used and its associated costs before announcing the higher rates. Unable to pay the new rates, the voluntary science group was forced to stop meetings at the ARC. After thinking that the group would have to continue online, one member suggested that the Winchester Club was looking for more groups to use its venue. On Monday, October the 3rd, Winchester Café C held its first meeting at its new home. Although still an increase in what the Science Café was previously paying, higher rates are manageable and members were delighted with the new base. Organiser William Vine said, "It was quite a relief to find the Winchester Club because it meant we could continue live events as we couldn't have possibly operated at what the Arc was going to charge. All round, it's been a very successful move. The team at the club has been great. They're very friendly and helpful. We're looking forward to a long future there." The Science Café is one of three groups that has moved to the Winchester Club following the price spikes at the Arc. The Director of Arts and Culture at Hampshire Cultural Trust, Back Jeffrey, listed three factors behind the new higher rates, including inconsistency in room rates, staffing prices for keeping the facility open out of hours, and energy costs. The HCT says it is unable to disclose which groups have stayed and which are leaving. However, the poetry group Winchester Muse has also shared its disappointment at the sudden notice of the new higher rates. Louise Taylor from Winchester Muse said, "We are now forced to conclude that HCT's own mission statement, to provide a venue for local community groups, and its website tagline, a place for arts, reading, community, all under one roof, is nothing more than semantics."
Top Oxbridge Offer Colleges. A college in Winchester has landed in the top five for pupils getting offers into Oxford and Cambridge universities. Peter Simmons College in Winchester has found itself in fourth place with a total of 56 offers, beating the likes of Eton College. The news comes as Oxford and Cambridge released figures showing how many offers they gave to pupils from schools in the 2021 UCAS application cycle. Four state schools are in the top 10 for Oxbridge offers, while the institution that is traditionally a favourite for the prestigious universities, public school Eton, trails behind them in ninth place.
A Halloween trail for half term. During the school half term week, Winchester Business Improvement District, that's BID, is organising a free Halloween themed trail activity. The Spooky Winch Word Hunt started on October the 15th and runs until October the 31st. Taking part will mean people can enter a prize draw to win a Halloween-inspired hamper. Before heading out across the city, collect a copy of the Spooky Winch Trail Sheet from the Visitor Information Centre, the Arc or Winchester City Museum, or download a copy from the Winchester BID website. The city centre will be split into nine areas and each area will have its own coloured pumpkin sign. Once all nine words have been found, return the completed trail sheet to either of these three locations, the Visitor Information Centre, the Arc or Winchester City Museum, to collect a Halloween-themed treat and to be entered into the prize draw to win a Halloween-inspired hamper. Paul Spencer, Executive Director of Winchester BID, said, "We're delighted to be hosting Spooky Winch again, with many more local businesses getting involved in this Halloween-themed seasonal activity."
Winchester restaurant named Best in County. An Indian restaurant and takeaway in Winchester has been crowned the best in the county and fourth best in the UK at a glittering awards ceremony in London. Rim Jim in City Road received the prestigious accolade at the Curry Life Awards and Gala Dinner 2022, beating stiff competition. Owner Mukit Ahmed Shokwat and Chef Shahidur Rahman attended the ceremony alongside friends and family at the Great Room of the Grosvenor House Hotel in central London on Sunday, October the 9th. Mr. Shokwat said, "I was shocked when I heard our name read out. I'm so happy and proud. But mainly, I want to thank my chef, my team, and the people of Winchester who supported us. We have a lot of friends in the city, and they are part of us and part of this achievement.
Secrets of the Lost Abbey are set to be uncovered. The secrets of the Lost Hyde Abbey will be revealed in the Hyde 900 weekend. At this year's King Alfred Lecture, architectural historian Dr. John Crook told the story of all an underground drainage culvert discovered during the 2022 community dig, which aroused huge public and media interest. Hyde Abbey was the last known resting place of King Alfred the Great. Dr. Crook has explored and studied medieval drains for more than 50 years and said the find has the potential to be one of the earliest medieval drainage culverts in the country. In my illustrated talk, I set the Hyde discovery in the wider context of monastic drainage systems. Such drainage systems in medieval abbeys are often unseen and frequently the oldest structure of any building and beautifully engineered. The talk at St. Bartholomew's Church, Hyde, was on Friday, October the 21st at 7 p.m. The event was preceded on Thursday, the October the 20th, with opening sessions featuring presentations by Hyde 900 Dig coordinator David Sperling and Bronwyn Stone from the University of Sheffield, who talked about the medieval window glass from Hyde Abbey. The glass forms a major part of her PhD research, and she explained how silver and centrifugal force helped create the windows and what they might have looked like 900 years ago. The evening also featured a talk by Professor Chris Mulvey entitled King Alfred's Astounding Inventions. The weekend continues with medieval tile making, a concert on Saturday the 22nd by the Amici Ensemble, walks around Hyde, and on Sunday the 23rd, the annual King Alfred's Day service and procession to King Alfred's gravesite in Hyde Abbey Gardens.
Have your say on local plan. Civic, have your say on local plan. I've probably repeated the title, sorry about that. Civic chiefs have approved the latest draft of the local plan and have set out the dates for when public consultation will launch. Winchester City Council's Cabinet approved the plan, which sets out how development, including housing, business construction and infrastructure, will evolve up to 2039. The public consultation will take the form of a website and several in-person events. It will run from November the 2nd to December the 14th. Councillor Jackie Porter said, "We are really grateful for the input people have given so far. It's helped to make the draft plan better. We look forward to hearing from residents to help us improve the plan still further." Councillor June Perrins from South Wanston Parish Council said, "We're opposed to development at West Hill Road North as it's a greenfield site. South Wanston Parish Council rejected all of the strategic housing location allocations for good reasons. West Hill Road North is a sensitive landscape and is not what the leader is promoting." Councillor Mark Smith, chairman of Otterbourne Parish Council, said one of the sites submitted in May was an area known as Gladman. The support from the parish council and the community was for a part-size development, with a caveat being submitted being of extreme importance. It can be used for carbon offset to rewild the land, but it has a public path dissecting it, which is seen as a village asset. It's an emotive topic as it's used for residents' well-being. Winchester City Council needs to know that there is no support from this parish council or residents for this to happen under any circumstances. Councillor Porter said that the issues raised would be discussed after the meeting, as the plan is still in its draft stage. Councillor Kelsey Lerner said, "We know that houses built now will be generating carbon for the next 100 years. The decisions we make now will make a real difference. We need the local plan to deal with everyone equally. I'm very happy to move this plan to consultation. Councillor Paula Ferguson said, I would like to extend my thanks to the officers for the time they have given this. It is important to ensure young people take part in the consultation. It's their future. I'm sure if she is still with us, Councillor Murphy would say, we cannot ignore the climate crisis. We have to make sure we plan for the future. The local plan consultation will launch on the 2nd of November.
Hose pipe ban to continue. Despite rain, which in fact it's doing as I look through the window of the studio this very second, it's hammering down. A water company has confirmed a hose pipe ban will stay in place despite recent rainfall. Southern Water introduced the ban for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight on August the 5th after a drought was declared. The ban was the first of its kind in the region since 2012 and was put in place because of the low levels of the rivers Test and Itchen. It applies to the use of a hose pipe for things like watering plants, cleaning cars or driveways or filling up paddling pools. A letter to customers has revealed that the ban will need to stay in place for, quote, a bit longer, unquote, and has detailed the effects it has had on saving water. The letter from Chief Customer Officer Katie Taylor said, thank you for playing your part and helping reduce the pressure on our valuable local water sources, the rivers Test and Itchen.
Winchester Prison in a staffing crisis. His Majesty's Prison, Winchester, is suffering from a staffing crisis as overcrowding, violence and drug use continue to blight the facility, according to a new report. In its annual paper published today, the Independent Monitoring Board found that although there have been some improvements, the Romsey Road Jail was suffering from the loss of experienced staff, a high turnover of prisoners, a persistent atmosphere of violence, and vermin-infested, crumbling, outdated buildings. However, the board did commend senior managers for their hard work and care for prisoners under such challenging conditions. It recognised that COVID-19 had remained the overriding influence on efforts to deliver a humane, fair and decent environment for the inmates, despite the prison's management of the pandemic remaining largely effective. That, coupled with a lack of resources, had led to a continued unsatisfactory nature of the living conditions, availability of drugs and contraband, and a prevailing atmosphere of volatility. It surmised recruitment, training, and retention of skilled staff had been extremely difficult in a region where other, better paid, less stressful jobs are available. The Victorian jail's facilities were also once again thrust under the spotlight. While major refurbishment and fire safety work on the main wings are almost complete, although standards of cleanliness were found to vary considerably between locations. The Chronicle previously received reports that damaged cabling had caused problems with defendants appearing at court via live link. Facilities such as heating and hot water for showers are regularly disrupted by breakdowns. Throughout the year, there were issues with leaking roofs causing danger from wet electrical equipment and exposed asbestos. During one incident, the water supply for the whole prison had to be turned off for 24 hours. IMB Chairman Rob Heather said, although there has been some improvement, there are many areas where the prison fell short of the standards required, including high levels of violence and not enough purposeful activity. Staff shortages and COVID restrictions meant that basic welfare checks were often not carried out, and the key worker scheme, which is meant to ensure meaningful interaction between staff and prisoners, was very seriously curtailed.
Backlog of cases at City's Crown Court. Winchester Crown Court saw its backlog of cases grow at the end of June, figures show. The Law Society of England and Wales warned trust in the criminal justice system is in jeopardy, with victims of even the most serious crimes facing long waits to get their case before a court. This comes as criminal barristers across the country voted to suspend indefinite strike action, launched over issues around legal aid fees and conditions, following a pay offer from the government. Barristers will be able to accept new instructions on cases from 6 p.m. on Monday, October the 10th, and return to Winchester Crown Court on Tuesday, October the 11th. Ministry of Justice data shows that there were 234 outstanding cases at Winchester Crown Court at the end of June. This was up from 209 at the end of March, but a decrease from 308 at the same point in 2021. Uncompleted case numbers are 4% higher than they were prior to the coronavirus pandemic. In June 2019, there were 226 cases outstanding at Winchester Crown Court. Of the cases outstanding at the end of June, 57, that's 24%, related to alleged violent attacks, and 30, that's 13%, were for sex offences, including two alleged rapes. The Chronicle was told by one source that there are now fears, even if cases are listed at court, there may not be enough people left in the profession to cover them following years of attrition. A Ministry of Justice spokesperson said, "Restoring the swift access to justice victims deserve is our absolute priority, and we are spending almost £500 million to reduce wait times, as well as boosting funding for victim support to £460 million over the next 3 years.
Ambulance workers set for strike action. Three ambulance trusts across the South Coast are facing strike action as workers are prepared to walk out over poverty pay. This comes as GMB members say they are at breaking point after facing another year of not being able to cover their bills. The three vital services are now gearing up for a strike vote as the union launches a formal industrial action ballot on behalf of its 3,500 members across the trusts. Ballot dates for South Central Ambulance Service, that's the SCAS, South East Coast Ambulance Services, that's SECAM, and South Western Ambulance Service, SWUST, will be announced in the coming days.
Action on parking is urged. Winchester Estate residents are calling on the City Council to take action on rogue parking on streets across Winnell. They are unhappy that residents-only parking permits are being abused by outsiders, with locals say little evidence that the issue is being policed by the council. Local residents are expected to pay at least £80 a year, with additional costs for multiple cars and visitors' permits to park near their homes. However, increasingly, residents have found high numbers of illegally parked cars taking up the amount of street parking available. The issue was raised by the Chronicle back in May, with people complaining about postal workers misusing permits. This paper has long reported that permits are being sold to outsiders. They were first introduced across the city in the 1990s, and Winnell has been among the last areas to get residents-only parking zones. Local resident and Conservative campaigner Sam Feltham said, "I've only ever seen one traffic warden in Winnell enforcing the permits that we pay for. It's incredibly frustrating for myself and my fellow local residents to be at the bottom of the priority list in the eyes of the council." City MP Steve Brine discussed the issue with residents during a pop-up surgery held last week in the street outside One Stop on Garbutt Road. He said, "There are always global issues that concern people, but this is a problem literally right outside people's homes. Among those they met were Len and Liz Mears, who live on Garbutt Road. Len said, "When we were asked to vote in favour of permits on Winnell, I and probably many others assumed that as Winchester City Council were going to make a good deal of money from the idea, that they would spend at least some of the profit on policing the estate. So far it seems that a traffic warden once every 3 months or so is enough. It isn't. Wake up, WCC." Other issues raised at the surgery included the removal of branches cut down by the City Council several months back, which haven't been taken away. Mr. Brine said he was picking both up as casework with the City Council.
Pub manager raises £3,000. The manager of a much-loved Winchester pub has thanked generous locals for their support after raising thousands for charity by running the London Marathon. John Howard of the Wickham Arms was one of 40,000 runners who flooded the streets of the capital to take on the mammoth 26.2-mile challenge on Sunday, October the 2nd. The 48-year-old crossed the finishing line with an impressive time of 4 hours, 40 minutes and 42 seconds, despite running the last 7 miles with cramp, and raised just shy of £3,050 for Autism Hampshire in the process. He said, "It was incredible. The crowd was on another level to anything I've ever experienced. I've missed almost every landmark on the way round because I was waving at people. I had my Autism Hampshire top on, which had my name on it. I made a promise to myself that I would run the entire marathon with a smile on my face and acknowledge everyone who called out to me, and I did. That made it a lot easier. I think long distance running is as much a mental challenge as it is physical. And all the positivity really helped. My three sisters, darling girlfriend Liz, and all 5 of our children also came to cheer me on, for which I was so grateful." A relative novice, John first got into running around 5 years ago when the former head chef of the Kingsgate Street Boozer, an experienced competitor, invited him to start jogging. Since then, he has completed several half marathons and 2 Great South runs for charity. Having originally secured a ballot place for the curtailed 2020 event, he was instead forced to defer. Now, after 5 months of hard training and with a whole lot of strapping to patch up a calf strain, he admitted he's only just coming down from the runner's high. "The buzz lasted until the Tuesday after," he added. "I've been boring everybody in the pub about it for days." Well, on that very positive story,
very positive
lovely
story.
We end our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts this week, to the copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our readers today, who were John Richards,
goodbye,
and Jane Rutter,
goodbye,
and from me, John Parker, goodbye. Please don't forget to return your memory stick as soon as possible, putting the label inside the envelope.